Welcome into another episode of Everything is Logistics, a podcast for the thinkers in freight. We are proudly presented by SPI Logistics, and I am your host, Blythe Brumleave. Today, I'm happy to welcome in Josh Lyles. He is the founder of Sales-CRM, and we are going to be talking about how to get your godforsaken sales team to use a CRM. Bane of my existence when I worked at a brokerage. So I'm excited for you to shed light on how other fellow marketers can help their sales team get established with a good process. So Josh, welcome into the show.
Thanks, Blythe. Great to be here. And yeah, that's the uphill battle that I climb every single week. So just taking it step by step over here.
Yes, exactly. Now, before we get into the CRM part of the conversation, I wanted to talk about a little bit about your background because it's actually really interesting. You used to work at Tesla before you started working at a freight brokerage, and then you became a founder. But what was, I guess, sort of the experience like working at Tesla?
Oh, it was. It was energy packed all the time. The one thing about their culture that's just great is that they're so mission driven, and you get really bought into that mission. A lot of people say you're drinking the Kool-Aid and whatnot. But I mean, I think if you're building any company, any culture, right, you want to make sure that you're doing things in a positive way that are fulfilling, and you know that you're just going towards, I think, a greater purpose overall. And that's what you felt every single day there. The moment I walked in day one, I felt that I was around a lot of talent. I joined them back in 2016, and there was a stat out there that it was almost harder to get a job at Tesla at that time than to get into like an Ivy League school. It's not the case today, but like back at that time. And I felt that when I first walked in, it was just like with everybody that was around me. And that's a good feeling when you come into a place where you know that you're going to be sharpened by every other team member that's on your team. So, Elon overall, I mean, it's just constant, you know, push for growth, problem solving. A lot of people always ask me all the time, you know, what was it like? And I only got to be involved in two conversations with him, but ultimately I think what made him such a great leader is he's just a problem solver. He cuts out all the different noise, and he'd always just say, what's it going to take for us to deliver more cars and sell more cars? All the time, that was just the conversation. And so it made everybody get into this problem solving mindset. And I think that that's really helped me throughout my career.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big, I'm not an Elon stan, but I am an Elon fan. So the stan culture is a little strange to me for any person, I guess, of influence. But I always really respect the work ethic that he has. And it sounds like it sort of, you know, just bleeds into everything that he does. What was so hard about getting the job there? You mentioned that it was extremely hard to get a job there.
They were just
like testing,
or they were just smaller at that time. So for example, at that time, I think they had two I was in Atlanta at that time. I'm in Nashville now, but they had two locations all in Georgia. You know, there wasn't that many locations in the Southeast. They were primarily just larger out in California. But a lot of people were applying for jobs at Tesla at that time. It was just a really popular up and coming company just, you know, in the EV space. And, I guess with the volume of applications. And luckily, and this is the reason why I tell people, especially about their LinkedIn page, I constantly will bring this up anytime I talk about how I got to Tesla, but I got there because they found me on LinkedIn. And I was one of the like early ones back in the day that always had my LinkedIn profile built out, even, you know, that I didn't have the best resume at that time, but I was currently working at New Balance when they had reached out to me, and I just had stuff about sales skills and marketing and all those kinds of things. And luckily a recruiter found me, and that's what got me to go through the job interviews and did well enough in the job interviews to get a job. So that's the reason why I always stress to people, because that changed my life a lot for the better. But having your LinkedIn profile just built out, tell a simple story, make it a little bit personable. It's the modern resume now at this point. I mean, back then it was there wasn't that much adoption, but obviously now it's picked up big time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely well said. I mean, even if you don't publish to LinkedIn every day, you can still make your profile something that people will want to check out and just verify your existence, verify your experience. But that's really cool that they sought you out. I was wondering if the process involved like, you know, what kind of animal are you that you have to answer in like interview meetings or some crazy stuff like that?
No, nothing like there was one manager there that asked some very strange, odd interview questions that I've never asked as a hiring manager and wouldn't really think to ask. But I guess that also kind of is what made the culture unique there as well.
What were an example of one of those questions? Gosh, I don't know if you're allowed to reveal it.
Honestly, I can't remember, but I just remember them being very outlandish to the point where I was like taking mental note of, would I ever want to ask these kinds of questions in an interview to really try to figure out about somebody's personality? The answer was no. If they come to mind, I'll definitely be sure to bring them up later on.
For sure. Now going from Tesla, you decided to join the world of freight.
Yeah.
Had you any kind of, experience in the world of logistics, or you just dived in?
Just dove in, just like most people, they just fall into it somehow, some way. So when I first moved to Nashville, when I was working for Tesla, I didn't know anybody when I moved here. I moved here really fast. Basically like within 2 weeks when I knew that I was going to be Tesla's store manager for their location here in Nashville. And my first two friends, actually, I knew through a friend of mine that I grew up with, was a really good friend of mine, and they all went to college together. And so they were really the only connections that I knew that lived here. And we ended up just hanging out, became pretty good friends, and I knew what they were doing, but not to a full extent. They would try to explain what freight brokerage is. They would just like label it logistics like everybody does. And you know how it is with family, relatives, spouses. They don't fully know what goes on. They just know like you're on the phone all the time and emails and, up early, sometimes staying up late and all that stuff. But they just got to a point where I was at Tesla and I wanted to look outside. I didn't really care about staying in Nashville. I didn't really care about staying. I was just really open to any and all opportunities. And they were working at a company. It was a really unique opportunity at the time. It was One Point Logistics, who was owned by Keep Truckin'. And once I got to understand a little bit more what freight brokerage was, but also why that was a unique opportunity with them being owned by an ELD company, that really stood out to me as a unique differentiator. And then, just going into the office, I had to go in like 4 or 5 times for on-site interviews. It took a long time for me to actually get approved for that job. But luckily I was able to, and it was awesome. I got to build a team of 12 from scratch. I was a sales manager. And that's really how I got my start into it.
And so that, what was, I guess, that while you were working there, or did you, I guess the company also got bought out. So was that the sort of the catalyst that you were going to become a founder? How did you move from working at a freight brokerage into becoming founder led?
Yeah. So no, they were actually, so Keep Truckin' had already bought them out before I joined. But my long-term goal had always just been to start my own business. Even when I was at Tesla, people would ask me like, hey, do you want to keep climbing the ladder? Because I started at the very entry-level position as a product specialist for them, and then got into a sales advisor role, and then assistant manager, and then store manager. And I saw what my boss did as a regional. I didn't really want to do that. But I always wanted to just start my own business. I've always been very interested in entrepreneurship. For the things that I like to read and study outside of work, a lot of the times that's what it is. So I just kind of knew that was always going to be the case. And then when OPL was shut down, that was ultimately when I was just trying to figure out, okay, what would be the thing that I want to start? Cause people ask you that all the time, right? If you do want to go down the route of entrepreneurship, is what do you want to start? And I just didn't know, but I just basically, like, the story is super simple. I literally just went to a coffee shop and I was like, all right, what do I feel that I'm very strong at from a skill standpoint? Or what do I feel that I do, better, understand more than other people? And as weird as it is, CRM software was the thing.
Well, I guess that sort of makes me want to ask the next question of what was missing, I guess, from like Salesforce or HubSpot that you felt like that you were missing that you wanted to create a solution for.
Simplicity is the easiest answer because everybody wants something that's simple. And the tough part about that is that, when it comes to being simple, a lot of people want the CRM to do so much work for them, but it's sales, right? And it's relationships, and there's effort that goes into relationships. So you have to do effort when it comes to your sales outreach and, and when it comes to notes and stuff, obviously you have to be really good at that. But I think I just had a really good way of like, I would always say, I don't think I was naturally like the overall best salesperson, but because my sales process was pretty strong at Tesla, I had pretty good results. And that's what kind of got me to start getting promoted in a multitude of different ways there. So it was really just from process, and that's what got me into management. I had some pretty good success in management there. And then also when I got into freight brokerage, when it came to onboarding new shippers, I just dove into it. Like, even though I was a manager, I first started and made my own cold calls and ran my own pipeline, closed my own customers, so I could get a good feel of what my account executives were going to go through on a day in and day out basis. And it's really just like the flow. It's such a good system. I know people don't like data entry. I get it. Like, it's not necessarily my favorite thing either. But when you see, I guess, the output come back to you in terms of, okay, great, I totally forgot about this one company or this one customer, and they popped up on my calendar today. It's September 27th, and I talked to them 4, 5, 6 months ago. Those were always things that always helped me in the sales process, and I think help anybody, because it's really hard when you have that many conversations especially in freight, right? With how many activities that they're driven to do on a day in and day out basis, like 50 is a pretty extreme minimum. Most people or companies that typically wanted 75 to 150 of activities. Mm-hmm. It's hard to remember all those details, and those details are what go a long way in building those relationships. And so I think just finding a good mental process and model in the CRM and making it simple, that way you understand it, your team understands it, and there's that alignment is really important. But a lot of the times people use it as a compliance tool to say, like, I'm checking the box and I got these activities done, versus this is how it's helping me in my sales process.
Are you in freight sales with a book of business looking for a new home? Or perhaps you're a freight agent in need of a better partnership? These are the kinds of conversations we're exploring in our podcast interview series called The Freight Agent Trenches, sponsored by SPI Logistics. Now, I can tell you all day that SPI is one of the most successful logistics firms in North America, who helps their agents with back office operations such as admin, finance, IT, and sales. But I would much rather you hear it directly from SPI's freight agents themselves. And what better way to do that than by listening to the experienced freight agents tell their stories behind the how and the why they joined SPI. Hit the freight agent link in our show notes to listen to these conversations, or if you're ready to make the jump, visit SPI3PL.com.
And so from what I understand with Sales Dash's journey, mm-hmm. you started off as kind of like a CRM for everybody, yes. before niching down into freight. Why the niche down?
Things weren't working. Simple enough. Like, my go-to-market strategy was just bad. And I'm not scared to admit that. And it was just too wide. It was casting a net too wide. And I always say, like, the sad part is I've read all the entrepreneurship stories about niching down and starting very small and then eventually, you know, scaling out, and how Apple and Amazon and all of them have done that in the past, and how they got to success doing that. But yeah, it was just too complicated, just reaching out to a multitude of different industries. I was focused more in the SMB space and more so inside sales teams, and it just wasn't working. And then I was just really getting to a point where I had to figure stuff out. But when I basically just said, okay, I'm going to focus more in the logistics space. This is literally back in February of this year. And I had my best week on the phones, reaching out to companies and getting some interest, getting them brought in. And then I just basically kept that momentum going. And then this is the real story, but like, going into April was the Capital Ideas Conference for TIA. And once I knew that conference was coming up, I would use that as I was prospecting and reaching out to companies. They'd be like, yeah, I'm going to be there. And then I built up a list of people that I knew were going to be there. And then I eventually just bought a ticket. And that was kind of the solidifying moment where I was like, all right, this is full blown the pivot that we're going to do. And that's where we're headed now. So everything with our product development for that we're doing in the CRM is all freight brokerage and 3PL focused.
Now, that's a really cool story that you built out your contact list, or basically like your hit list, before going to the conference. And then that was the motivation to be like, okay, yeah, I'm definitely going to make this conference worth it. Because one thing that I don't think gets talked about enough is that for a lot of like soloists, I experienced this myself. When you go to a conference, it's very expensive.
Yes.
Somebody has to do the work while you're gone. All of the pre and the post work that is involved. But I imagine that maybe your tool is helping you,
oh, yeah.
you know, be a little bit more successful at the, you know, the booking the meetings and then the following up afterwards, which is where, frankly, I struggle with.
Yes, it did help, because I already kind of had that list. I was building that list and I had my notes for what I talked with them about, what I knew about them. The hardest part at those conferences is when you're talking to so many people. Like, the Capital Ideas Conference at TIA was challenging because there's 1,900 people there and you're just talking to one person after another after another. So really what I did was actually just build a list of notes in my phone, and then eventually, you know, from the people that I spoke with, so that way I could remember who I spoke with, because I think I ended up with 54 business cards. And honestly, there was like some digital ones and then just, you know, ones that we just exchanged contact info. So you lose track of all of it. But I just kind of kept like a really small list of notes, because it's actually stuff that I used to do at Tesla back in the day, because I worked at a mall when I worked for them. And we used to just have an iPad. You'd be holding an iPad, almost like an Apple employee. That's how they kind of built their model. And I would just do abbreviated notes. And if you read them, it wouldn't really make sense, but it's just like a mental abbreviation of notes and everything that I understand, and then I can expand upon it later. And so when I just got back to my Airbnb every single night, I would just like recall, okay, hey, these are all the people, and just make sure I set my follow-ups with them.
That's cool. The notes app at conferences, I think, is undefeated.
If you're not using the notes app, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Now, one thing I am curious about is the fundamental way to manage a CRM different for freight brokers versus anyone else?
It's not that like the fundamentals, I guess, of the frameworks. It's more so just, I guess, like the language and the way that they think about them. So It's really interesting because, I mean, I still work with freight brokers that are small to medium size. And sometimes it doesn't really matter the size of the company, but some of them go with like very basic sales processes and strategies. And then some of them don't really have anything at all. And it's still not uncommon for me to come across somebody that's still just using spreadsheets. They don't really know, you know, what's happening. And you know, when I talk with them about sales process, so like I just posted about this, and this is a small example, but, and I'm sure you're very like used to this from your experience as well. But a lot of the times in sales, people just say like, hey, this lead or this opportunity is cold, warm, or hot. And realistically in a sales process, it doesn't really make a lot of sense because what is cold to me could be hot to you or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Like literally could be the case. I've coached plenty of salespeople where they'd be like, hey, Josh, I've got a hot one. And then it's like, hey, no, there's honestly a lot more information that we need. This one's still actually cold or warm. But here's a small example of that. So like we have a 4-step simple process, and this is all through customization. Like this is where customization goes a long way, but people pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for this when it comes to HubSpot, Salesforce, and you can do it in there, but like you have to be good at doing it. Ours is just already basically templated. That gives you a really good foundation for sales process, profiling shippers, qualifying shippers from day one. But going from like the cold, warm, hot, an example would be, okay, as a freight broker, you're reaching out to a shipper. We have 4 steps, discovery, pains, needs, pricing, and then setup paperwork. So you're trying to think, okay, instead of like calling them and being like, hey, wanted to see if you're ready to follow, you know, like got any freight, all this kind of stuff. There's basically always certain steps where you're trying to align and make sure that they're the best fit for you as a freight broker with the services that you provide, the carrier network that you have. So discovery would be general information of equipment types, their volume, what kind of modes, you know, between full truckload, LTL, do they do spotter contract, project freight, that kind of stuff, right? Align on that. Does it fit within what you provide? And then from a pains and needs standpoint, what's the reason they're going to bring you on as a carrier? They get reached out to all the time. Like, are you actually going to help them out when it comes to like missed pickups or wrong equipment types being sent in or just pricing, whatever it may be? And then the 3rd step would be pricing. You need to price out lanes to make sure like your pricing lines up. And the 4th step is you exchange some paperwork, whether it's your credit app or they send you a contract. And then that's typically how you get lined up, right? So it's not that it always goes in that flow, but that's a common flow from overseeing 2 different teams in brokerage that I found. So that way, instead of just thinking like, hey, what do we need to do next year? This is our process that we typically do, and we want to follow this. And so when we know where each one is in each step, when we click like, okay, here's the opportunities that are in pricing, we know that this is what we're striving to do right now with these specific shippers that are in that bucket.
Now, with the process that you're talking about, how common is that process being established at freight brokerages? Because when I worked at a freight brokerage, it was essentially like, we're going to pluck you out of the nearest college, we're going to sit you down at the phones, and you're just going to make 100 cold calls a day. That was the process.
Right.
What should I guess, with respect to what you're talking about, what should I guess a modern sales process look like at a freight brokerage?
Well, I think if you talk about a college kid coming into it, this is an easier way to streamline your sales process to say, hey, instead of like me having to kind of coach you through it, the system is going to help guide you through it in terms of the information that you're seeing in front of you, right? So if you have those specific items, because so if you take a Salesforce or a HubSpot, not to like name them, but like the generic CRMs out of the box, and I hear this from freight brokerages monthly, but they'll say like, it really feels that they're built for SaaS or software companies when you take them out of the box, right? And for them, like they just need really simple stuff. There's certain things that they want to know about each shipper. And so we want to give them the ability to just kind of customize it that way. But what I would say is, and this is really the easiest way I always frame it, is like take your best salesperson in their process, right? What would they want to always ask a shipper to understand? And you can cook that into the CRM. And it's not that it's a call script, but it's going to be in front of you every single time when you jump into each shipper and each account that's in the system. And then that information is always in front of you. And then you know that, okay, I need to be asking or learning about this information every time that I'm reaching out to somebody. So I think that that's where, even if you are a college kid, it's this information's in front of you. If you don't understand what it is, then obviously they'll ask their teammates to try to understand that. But at least that's already kind of cooked into the system. So that way they could be better guided versus just like, okay, I'm just picking up the phone and I'm just giving them a shout.
Yeah. I mean, you raise a lot of really important truths, because I think for a lot of folks, especially like when it comes to like marketing versus sales, like marketing is typically, in my experience, going to be making the decision on like what kind of software they use, what kind of CRM that they use. Mm-hmm. And maybe that is the gap between marketing and sales, of like, this software doesn't really work for sales unless it's highly customized. And it's also, to your point that you made earlier, HubSpot is very expensive. You can get like the base level, you know, quote unquote free CRM for, you know, like $30 a month, but that bill will quickly tick up if you want, you know, some additional features that are kind of standard on a lot of different platforms.
Right.
So I guess for a lot of brokerages out there, what does, so you suggest, you know, learning from your best salesman, establishing those different processes, and then when using your tool, they're essentially able to enter in like the equipment, the lane, the commodity, things like that directly into the CRM, if I understand you correctly.
Correct. For each shipper that they're talking to. And then, you know, they can build it out. And then when it comes to qualifying opportunities with like pipeline management, that's where you can even take it a step further when it comes to qualifying the opportunity, of kind of going back to some of those similar things. Is it a project, contract, spot opportunity, mini bid, RFP, you know, maybe figuring out seasonality, documenting what those months are, so you have that for reporting. And then you can, like, we even have it to where we build out, especially when we do implementations with companies, to really help them, you know, try to understand these opportunities. Like, a couple examples would be, how do they measure carrier performance, and asking them that. How many carriers are they working with for that specific opportunity? It could be a location, or, you know, it could be just in general, just for their spot freight, but just those kinds of different questions to understand the scope of the opportunity, competitiveness around it. Those items, you can basically build that into those, let's just say, like, deal opportunity forms in the system. And we already have a foundation of it with some like starter ones, and then they can build on it from there.
And so does your company help with like a, you know, implementation, integration? It kind of sounds like you do.
Yes.
So if you're helping with that, what are maybe some of those keys to success, not just implementing it, but using it on an ongoing basis?
Yeah. So I think it really starts in the customizing of it, because you want it to just show the information that you talk about on a daily basis. You want that to be in the system, right? Because if it's not there, and that's not going to be something that people leverage to actually enter in. So that's the first thing. Like, just as simple as us having equipment types and modes and contractor spot freight already in our templated version, there's already people that say it's just great to be able to see that stuff in there. And, you know, certain reports on their dashboard that are like my active shipper leads, or shippers that haven't been contacted in 14 days. Like, people already just love the fact that it's talking their language, and just in that in itself. But,
Sorry,
go back to what was the question again?
Well, it sounds like you're creating those light bulb moments for them from the jump to help them to keep using it. Because that was always the struggle that I had, is like, I can show them the technology and they'll say, yeah, that's great. But for them to actually continue to use it on an ongoing basis was where I struggled with the most with working with the sales team. So I would imagine that seeing those light bulb moments, like what you're talking about, helps them to use it more regularly, where they're almost like getting those signals. I would imagine there's reporting and things like that can further highlight that kind of data.
Correct. So for example, like with HubSpot, their custom reporting and everything is on their largest package, which gets really expensive. We already have custom reporting that's built into it. But going back to your initial question with this, is a lot of it actually, I would say, and a lot of success is driven from sales managers and the people that are overseeing it. And again, it's not always about just like, hey, we're just trying to hit a specific number, we're trying to do these things. You're trying to help your team work towards better behaviors that drive more new shipper relationships and expand the existing relationships that you have and the opportunities that you have with them. And so the things that they see, you know, for example, just on their dashboard, like, I get really technical when it comes to this and even just the design and how we've templated this out. But even from the first things that you see from like the first part of the screen and working left to right, top to bottom, to me is really important, because if there's a certain metric, and I always just say like, what gets measured gets managed. But if that's not on your dashboard as a sales manager, or even as a salesperson, then you're going to forget about it, because you're not measuring it. It's not something that's consistently on your radar. But that's what I often found with the other CRMs out of the box, was I would build out all those dashboards to make sure like every one of those specific things was on it. But if it's not on your radar, then it's easy for that stuff to fall by the wayside. But it's honestly, if it's just on your dashboard, it's such an easier way to basically build a lot more momentum and better behaviors. And then I just know it for a fact, but like once you start to see that and you start to get more success and you're starting to close more customers, you're staying in front of them, those behaviors are driving better results. Then at that point, it honestly just becomes part of your process. You're like, these are the things that I know that lead me to success. So a lot of it is approach by leadership.
And I would imagine, that you're the data and the insights that you're getting from that, you can actually see which kinds of customers, what kinds of equipment, lanes, that kind of thing are closing more at a higher rate, which I would imagine would also help the marketing department be able to make some content or, you know, make some different campaigns that could complement those high success rates. Is that fair to say?
I think of course. Yeah, because I only worked with a marketing department, and it was smaller at my first brokerage, and then I helped with some of that at the last one that I was at over at Silo. But it can marketing can take a lot of things that they're seeing from notes, because for example, like talking about marketing, and like I'll even just talk about how I use marketing when it comes to Sales Dash. But I look at all the notes. Like for example, I run a quick report, so anytime that somebody shows up to one of my meetings and my demos, I mark that as a meeting show in my CRM. And so what I know is that I can pull a report of all those activities, and these are all the demos that I've had with people. And I am a crazy note taker, because for me, like attention to detail is important. And I want to make sure that if they're really interested in the CRM, I can actively progress the sale. But even just the small pieces of that, I will use what they tell me to fuel a lot of my marketing for Sales Dash, for example, right? And then same thing as a freight broker, if a shipper is telling you specific things of like either challenges or things that they care about, those are really good questions then to ask other shippers, because if they care about it, chances are the other shippers care about it. Or if they don't know, it's a really good thing to put on their radar. So yes, when it comes to marketing and messaging and what you specialize in, I think that's important. But also even just like the smallest thing, for example, of your closed customers, like what are the characteristics, what industry, what's their employee size, what's their approximated annual revenue? You can pull those things from having the list of them, seeing that reporting, and then you can find out to help you further refine your ICP for the kinds of shippers that you're going after. Because you may think that, hey, we specialize with these kinds of companies, but then sometimes when you look at it, you're like, oh, wait, these are the ones that are actually bringing in, you know, the most revenue for us right now, the most profit.
Yeah, absolutely. Data tells a lot more stories than, you know, just going off of, I guess, affirmations or feelings or gut feelings or things like that.
Exactly.
It's important to have that data to back it up as well. Now, I'm surprised that we made it almost 30 minutes in this conversation and the topic of AI has not been brought up yet. So I'm going to use this as an opportunity to bring it up now. How do you think about AI? Is it plans to incorporate these kinds of, technology, large language models, things like that, into the CRM? I mean, not to bring up HubSpot again, but I know that they have their ChatSpot platform that they're, you know, fine tuning, still very much in its infancy phase based on the tests that I've run. Any thoughts on, you know, how you can incorporate AI into your sales process?
Yeah. So I think it's inevitable that AI is going to be incorporated no matter what. And I think there'll be a multitude of different ways. We're going to start to explore it more next year. Because we're finishing out some new product development right now that, you know, we just really want to become one of the strongest CRM platforms, or really the strongest CRM platform for freight brokerages and 3PLs to manage their shipper and carrier relationships. But I think a multitude of different ways. I think the way that a lot of people are using it is for email copy. I think that's huge right now, and it makes a lot of sense, and people can always write better emails, but it's really good for that. I think it can be really, you know, good when it does come to some just creative ideas, when it does come to marketing, or even just like your emails and your sales outreach, or let's just say if you're building a one pager, for those things. I think it's going to become really important for reporting personally, in CRM, in terms of, hey, I want to see, you know, all my shippers that are out of like this specific city, this specific state, within this industry, and just like a really quick text chat. So that way they don't have to do typical filters in the CRM. I think that that's going to be a big opportunity. Notes obviously will be really important in terms of scraping, in terms of, you know, what's already in the system. And then I think there can be some further things on the analytical side when it comes to observing your deals that are in the system, what's been won, what's been lost, to try to pull some specific insights out of those. So there's more on top of it, but I think specifically if you talk about the use cases for CRM, those will be a good amount of them. And then I'm just seeing other things like cold calling. I'm seeing AI cold callers right now, which is really interesting. I don't know about that. I'm so much bigger on the personalization side than automation. I don't know how you feel about it, Blythe, but like it's freight too. Like freight is a relationship driven business. And I just don't think like you can automate relationships fully. Like there's always got to be that human element, but at the same time, like there's still things that AI can help to knock out some of the tedious, you know, manual tasks.
If a company used an AI voice calling whatever function to cold call me, I would instantly block them.
Like, there you go.
I wouldn't even think about it. I would never even look at their company name. It was just instant block, move on. That's how I feel about that. But I'm right there with you. I think that AI can be used in like increasing like some administrative things, administrative processes, and helping to kind of shine a light on areas that you might miss yourself. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it, you know, it will evolve into something, and it looks like it's getting there, to be able to, you know, look at like your website analytics,
yeah,
or look at like CRM analytics and be able to decipher and create some takeaways for you. So I think that that's the logical sort of next step, that I've been using ChatGPT for. Mm-hmm. So I haven't used any other tool because that's, I want to use my own data in order to extrapolate that feedback. But I'm right there with you. It has to, I think, fuel your processes in order to have better conversations that are, you know, built on the back of those in-person relationships, but also those personal touches too, which is, I think, where the CRM just really plays a vital role in being able to just, you know, keep track of all of those notes. Now, you mentioned, you know, a product roadmap. What does whatever you can share with us, mm-hmm, what does sort of the product roadmap or releases look like for Sales Dash for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so most CRMs really just focus on shippers and just shipper management, shipper relationship, mm-hmm, management. And so really right now what we're working on and we plan on demoing at Technovations when we present at the Shark Tank.
That's right.
Yep. What we plan on presenting is really our carrier side. So you're going to be able to capture, import your carriers. We have found brokerages will store them in spreadsheets as well. Good old spreadsheets will never, ever go away in our lifetime probably. but we're going to be showing basically that functionality, how it's going to be complementing, what the shipper information that's already in our system, and then lane capturing as well. So, mm-hmm, so some Google integration that comes into that, with the lane capturing, but capturing lanes for shippers, capturing lanes for carriers, to really try to make it a really strong sales engine, for freight brokerages, outside of just the shippers that are, you know, typically that they'll see in their CRM. We want to give them fuel essentially to be re-engaging with their shippers in a way that's a little bit more unique, but also to deepen carrier relationships, not make them so transactional. We hear this commonly. It's what a lot of people promote, but honestly, most brokerages have transactional relationships with their carriers. And we want to have the CRM to where not only like it depends on the model that you are between, you know, cradle to grave, split model, that kind of stuff. So there's some considerations that go into it when it does come to that, but we want to make it a really easy place that you can access, run really quick reports, but our reporting is also feeding really good insights to the shipper sales team, also back to the carrier sales team to help deepen the relationships that live in the system.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense, because if you're spending all this time and energy trying to get shippers and then you have a crappy carrier on that first load, then you probably all that hard work was for nothing. So that's really interesting about the Shark Tank for at TIA. What was sort of the process that it made you want to apply for something like that? I mean, obviously exposure, but...
Right. Yeah. I mean, definitely exposure, because we're just trying to get our name out there. You know, I mean, a lot of what I do when it comes to marketing and all that stuff is that if CRM gets brought up in conversation and meetings and if people are evaluating CRMs for their brokerage, like we just want to be considered. We want to have a conversation. We're not going to win them all. I do feel that we have really good conversations with people, but we're actively building in the space. Everything that we build from here on out is going to be specifically in the space. And I think when it came to that, I was actually not going to do it. And then when I knew that we were going to be in a decent spot for building this next, the product development that we're working on right now on the carrier and lane side, that's ultimately when I made the decision. I was like, let's just get up there and go do it. And honestly, I mean, to me, I look at it as an opportunity that there's a bunch of decision makers that are in the room. Why not get in front of them? And, you know, obviously not going to close all of them and it's okay, but just to even establish that relationship. And it's the same thing. If CRM gets brought up, like that's really the biggest thing, is just, we just want to be in consideration. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm an avid Shark Tank watcher. I just watched the marathon that comes on every Tuesday. I watched it yesterday. So I'm wondering who's going to be the Mr. Wonderful of the group. That's going to be kind of the, not the mean one, maybe more the more realistic one. So that'll be interesting to watch. And so we'll have to definitely keep the audience updated on the performance there and how it all turned out. But as we sort of round out the conversation, I like to come to one of my favorite segments now, and it's these recurring questions. I call it the relatable eight that I ask, or I'm starting to ask, you know, each interview guest on the show. So I think you are about the fifth or sixth person that we've asked these questions to. So let's get started. We kind of already talked, you know, a little bit about this, but how do you think about marketing when it comes to you versus your brand? Is it, you know, kind of collaborative, or, you know, is it kind of you keep them independent?
No, I think it's totally collaborative, because at the end of the day, people make up your company and your brand. So I think that's really important. I think there's a lot of opportunity too for more people in logistics. I think you're seeing more activity, for example, on LinkedIn, on Twitter, X, even on TikTok and whatnot. But you're seeing a lot more activity where they're starting to speak up. And that does go a long way, because, I mean, so much of it is just people knowing who you are. Like, that's a lot of the objective of marketing, is getting attention and people knowing who you are. And if they don't, then when it comes to just like recruiting or, you know, other kinds of partnerships, potentially even customers, that, you know, where people can refer you in the right direction, that's not going to be had. So it's honestly kind of just like a simple thing of, instead of consuming content, I'd rather be a creator, and people also, you know, taking it, I guess, just like watching and consuming my content. It's free distribution. I mean, the fact that you can just build a post for free and thousands of people can see it, like, why would you not do that? That's just, sure, some of it may come off as cringe at times, some of it may flop, but at the end of the day, like, just another touch point where your face and your name is out there can go a long way if you can stay consistent with it. So it's not the easiest thing to do, but I just think staying out in front is really important. And then for me, when it comes to the marketing, mentioned it earlier, but like really utilizing what customers tell me, whether it's feedback or things that they like or don't like, you know, even if it comes to our product roadmap and they can help build that out. But really using customers to help fuel that is really the stage that we're in when it comes to our messaging and our positioning and what I know that, again, just like we were talking about, but if they care about it, there's a very good chance that other brokerages are going to care about it as well.
Yeah, preach. And so from the, I am always just baffled by the companies that don't pursue some kind of founder-driven marketing, that they should be having their founder on camera, whether it's long-form video or short-form video, talking about the solutions that they have for their target audience. And speaking of short-form video, this isn't actually related to the Relatable 8 set of questions, but you do a lot of short-form video marketing over on YouTube Shorts. Was that a conscious effort, or did you just see the opportunity there to get brand awareness?
Yeah, so funny enough, I actually do more of it on TikTok. The YouTube Shorts is probably like a fraction of what I have. But I just saw a big opportunity in it. You know, I wanted to leverage a lot of people think it's just, you know, young kids dancing on TikTok and whatnot, but TikTok is realistic. You know, it's a really great area to, I think, to be. And there's actually more people in trucking that are on TikTok than you probably be aware of. But the thing I love about short form in general is that it's short, like the fact that it's short form, it's really hard to get your messaging right in a, let's just say 15 to 30 second clip. It's hard for anybody that's tried it. It's really tough because you can just go on for minutes and minutes. So honestly, I do it as almost like practice for myself, to try to figure out like, how can I try to capture somebody's attention or provide a really good message in the shortest period of time, just because all of our attention spans are going down year by year.
Yeah, it's definitely, I hated it when Twitter/X removed they bumped it up from 140 characters to like 240, which was okay. But now you can write like 1,000, yes, like 1,000 word blog articles on Twitter. I'm like, this is not what this was for. Yep. I liked the conciseness and, you know, the impact that you could have with saying something with less words. But I'm right there with you. It's very challenging, which is why I use, you know, interviews like this to be able to cut it down into, you know, digestible clips. That's much more easier to go back in the editing process, or to just use AI like Opus and be able to plug a video like this right into Opus and have the software, you know, pick a good clip for you and do a lot of like, you know, 80% of the legwork. So great tips on that. But I guess I kind of know the answer to this next question. What's your favorite social media platform and why? TikTok.
It is going to be. It is going to be. I know it's so weird. It's going to be TikTok, and the main reason it's going to be TikTok is because I can just learn things the fastest there. It's really as simple as that. If for you to be able to build a video that's actually effective, you have to be able to teach something super fast, super simple, and that's the reason why I love it. It's going to be TikTok or YouTube, because if I need to get really deep, then I'm obviously going to YouTube. But if I need something super quick, I'm not even going to TikTok. But I use it all the time to learn things as fast as I can.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely on that platform. I either laugh or I learn. Yeah, with every other platform, it feels like there's, I mean, TikTok has a lot of drama too, but it feels like every other platform just has too much drama of like the people I don't want to, or the people that I regularly see with TikTok. I don't know any of these people that show up on my feed, which is great.
Yeah.
So it's just a totally different experience. Okay. Next question. What is your favorite SaaS tool that you use every day and can't live without, but it's not your own?
Google Workspace. Super basic, fundamental answer, but I can't live without it. It's super boring. I know. If I was to say a backup, or like, let's just say, all right, that's going to be 1A, but if I had to say 1B, 1C, Canva is super important when it comes to marketing. It can make anybody a marketer. That's what's so awesome about it. It's such a simple tool, and just getting the practice with it helps. And then this one's probably unique, but CleanShot X. So CleanShot X is like helps with screenshots and with recording like screen grabs and all that kind of stuff. A lot of times if you see, you know, any specific screen grabs of like our software or even just like little things that I do, most of the time, that's actually what I use. It is the easiest thing. I use it. I don't know if it's just for Mac, but, you know, I know there's like snipping tool, but I use it
every. Like Loom or something? Is it kind of exactly. like that?
Exactly. Instead of using Loom, I can just use that and record a specific spot of the screen, and it can take all the audio, video, everything from it. Or I can like be in my CRM and, you know, have myself, just like Loom, have myself as a little circle in it. So.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it probably makes for great like product demos, quick product demos. Okay. Next question is favorite freight business that isn't your own.
Oh, any freight brokerage that uses Sales Dash is easily my favorite. I love talking to them, and sometimes I get a lot of questions, but honestly, I love it. But that is my answer.
That's kind of cheating, but we'll let it.
I'll come back to that one.
Okay. Next one. What's one task in your current job that you can't stand doing?
Editing content.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need AI. I heard you say an AI tool. I'm taking a note. Opus. I'm going
to
look into
Opus
that.
Clips is a godsend, because they just released they don't pay me for any of this, but they just released a major update in the month of August where it like auto frames and you can select and, you know, highlight keywords. So if you're only looking for like maybe like AI in one conversation, it will just isolate that part of the conversation that you talked about AI. I cannot speak enough better things about that platform. Okay. Next one. If you didn't have to worry about money, what would you want to do for the rest of your life?
I would want to be a GM for an NBA team.
That sounds like a lot of work.
I would love it. I would love it. I love basketball. I love sports, but basketball and NBA has always been my favorite. Leadership is one of the biggest things I've always just kind of studied, and, you know, assembling a team and all that kind of stuff. I just think it would be a lot of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that's probably, I would enjoy that. I know it'd be stressful for sure. I know the stresses that come into it, but that's what I would sign up for sure.
But what's the organization that you're going to pick?
I guess I'll pick the Atlanta Hawks just because I'm from Atlanta. You know,
yeah, they still have a lot of work to do.
They have a lot of work to do. And honestly, I would want to take a project. I would not want to go to one of the established, like I wouldn't want to play, you know, be at the Lakers or for the Celtics or, you know, one of the historic teams like the Bulls. I want to take a full blown project. Yeah.
Heck yeah. Yeah. The small market teams deserve love too.
Yeah. You know, like I know a lot of people be like, oh, I just kick my feet up at the beach and like, that would be fun if I didn't have to, but like that, I have to be doing something. Like I enjoy work. Yeah. And even that other question you asked about like what task, I honestly enjoy them. Like even editing content, I don't necessarily like love it, but I'm still going to do it because I know how important it is. Like I'm thankfully like at a spot where I really enjoy what I do. And you know, like work is, you can make work fun.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's like the 80-20 rule. Yeah. If you enjoy 80% of your job, then the other 20% is worth dealing with in order to enjoy the rest of that 80%. Okay, next one. What is something you believe in that most people don't?
Sales can be fun. I believe that. I literally think it's as simple as this. And this is my easy flip of it, because growing up, I was a big introvert, didn't talk that much. I was just like a big listener, observer, all that stuff. But to me, it's like flipping your mindset that you're not selling, that you're, and you're just helping. You're helping others.
Yeah, 100%. I struggle with, because we're both part of Nate Shute's founder group within logistics. And so that's one thing that I have confessed is that I am terrible with outbound sales. But it is something that I want to get better at. So actively trying to improve that process. Inbound sales is great. Yeah. Outbound sales is what terrifies me.
But even in that, like I think about it for what you do. You have a huge reach. You know, you have one of the most established podcasts in the logistics space, right? Like that in itself, anybody that has a product or has, you know, needs to get in touch with the logistics community and the logistics network, it makes so much sense for them to look at a sponsorship for the podcast, you know? So like for me, no, it does.
I did not tell him to say that, ladies and gentlemen.
But it does. It makes a ton of sense. So that's the reason why I'm saying it's like you would be helping somebody out because the ROI should be there for them, that this is where their audience is and they're listening. And for those that are really interested in it, they're listening to this. Somebody that's in the, you know, a random industry, like this is logistics focus. It's in the name.
Well, I'm going to cut that clip and that's going to be up on a sales page. So thank you for that. All right. And last one, what is your favorite supply chain or logistics fact?
I think it's really interesting, but if you consider the amount of miles that an average, like just truck driver, heavy truck driver drives every single day, I think the average is around like 500 miles. And if you take basically all the truck drivers globally, they basically drive about a fifth of a light year. Or if you were to actually do the amount of trips to the sun, it's about 6,000 times to the sun and back.
Is that every day or is that lifetime?
That's yearly.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Nice fact.
Yeah. It's a cool fact that I saw, and I was like, wow, that's, I mean, you don't realize like, I mean, obviously like everything has to be moved typically, or, you know, most stuff is moved via over the road, truckload and all that kind of stuff. But and I know there's a lot of ocean air freight and all that, but when you consider like how many miles are driven just to get stuff from point A to point B, like, yeah, you don't think about it globally. Cause like for us, for US, you know, Canada, Mexico, like just it's a lot. I thought it was impressive.
Yeah, for sure. There's a former podcast guest. He's actually going to be a recurring guest in the future, Brian Glick. He said that it is absolutely, with all the crap we talk about with, you know, logistics and supply chain crisis and things like that, it is remarkable that we can get something shipped from one part of the globe to the other part of the globe, a lot of times within a week less than that. That's incredible.
It's a fun space that we live in.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's filled with problems. It's filled with people who are willing to, you know, get creative and solve those problems. So Josh, we appreciate your time and insight on this topic. Where can folks follow more of your work? You know, get signed up for a demo over at Sales Dash, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so easy way to get connected with me is on LinkedIn. You can find me at Josh Lyles, L-Y-L-E-S. And then our website for our CRM for Sales Dash is sales-crm.com. Dash is spelled out D-A-S-H. But you can always schedule a demo. If you schedule a demo, I'll be the one to host it and talk with you. It's a pretty short demo for the most part because it is a fairly simple system. But that's always going to be the easiest way. And then you can always start a 14-day free trial if you're somebody that just likes to get your hands dirty and just take it for a test run.
Heck yes. So we will make sure to include all of those links in the show notes just to make it easy for folks. But Josh, this was an awesome discussion. We'll have to have you back on in the future in order to talk about how the Shark Tank episode went. But again, thank you for sharing your insight. And hopefully, you know, some marketers and sales reps out there got a little bit better today after listening.
Hopefully. Thanks for having me on, Vlad. Really enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Everything is Logistics, a podcast for the thinkers in freight, telling the stories behind how your favorite stuff and people get from point A to B. Subscribe to the show, sign up for our newsletter, and follow our socials over at everythingislogistics.com. And in addition to the podcast, I also wanted to let y'all know about another company I operate, and that's Digital Dispatch, where we help you build a better website. Now, a lot of the times we hand this task of building a new website or refreshing a current one off to a coworker's child, a neighbor down the street, or a stranger around the world, where you probably spend more time explaining the freight industry than it takes to actually build the dang website. Well,
That doesn't happen at Digital Dispatch. We've been building online since 2009, but we're also early adopters of AI, automation, and other website tactics that help your company to be a central place to pull in all of your social media posts, recruit new employees, and give potential customers a glimpse into how you operate your business. Our new website builds start as low as $1,500, along with ongoing website management, maintenance, and updates starting at $90 a month, plus some bonus freight marketing and sales content similar to what you hear on the podcast. You can watch a quick explainer video over on digitaldispatch.io. Just check out the pricing page once you arrive, and you can see how we can build your digital ecosystem on a strong foundation. Until then, I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'll see you all real soon, and go Jags!